When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, today's guest is Devin Kay, guitarist and lead vocalist for the Chicago, Illinois punk rock band, Devin Kay and the Solutions. Together, we discuss the writing, recording, and inspiration behind their fan favorite song, Millennial Homesick Blues, taken from their brand new EP, Fine, a ska EP. This band is the epitome of the do-it-yourself work ethic. I recently had the pleasure of touring with them as they crisscrossed the U.S. with Less Than Jake this past summer. They're a lot of fun, and they mix a lot of different styles together without ever sounding disjointed. Devin mentioned that in their case, the mixer is the most important person to them during the recording process. Each member recorded their parts separately, but enlisted the mixing duties of Kelson Zibikorski, who absolutely smashed it. This song is super fun, quirky, and gets better with each repeated listen. The key change at the end took a second for me to wrap my head around, but once I did, it became my favorite part of the track. So for all this and a whole lot more, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Devin, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you this day? I'm bewildered that I'm here. I listened to all your episodes recently, and it's not lost on me that Huey Lewis in the News was on this, and I'm going to talk about a dumb song on the same podcast.
Well, in all fairness, Huey Lewis in the News at some point had sold as many records as Devin Kay and the Solutions. So, you
that's
know,
one way to look at it. Yeah. Okay.
And that is a truth. Okay.
They sold 35 records? That's amazing.
Well, let me tell everyone out there listening a little bit about my friend Devin Kay here. If you're not familiar with Devin Kay and the Solutions, I met Devin, gosh, going back at least 10 years, Devin was playing a band called Direct Hit, who you guys were gaining, in my opinion, a lot of steam. You were putting a lot of tours behind you. You were working extremely hard. And from my eyes, and I know we talked about this recently, and for those that don't know, Devin Kay and the Solutions were recently out with Less Than Jake on the first half of our Welcome to Rockview summer tour. Actually, it was kind of like the last third of those shows. And then the second half of the tour, you did like the first half of it. And Devin and I were out talking and talking about a lot of stuff. We went out to eat one day and we just got really into it.
Very deep stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, just going back to the Direct Hit days and, you know, you kind of mentioned that, you know, around 2018, 2019, things started to kind of slow down for the band. And then of course the pandemic hit and I was unaware that Devin Kay and the Solutions was a thing prior to COVID. I didn't know that you had started the band. And from what you told me, what you gathered, you basically felt like, hey, I better, you know, have something to kind of fall back on if Direct Hit isn't going to move forward. And during the pandemic, you worked tremendously hard to put this together.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I feel like I can't speak for Direct Hit and what they're up to, but it did feel like we were kind of hitting. I think the pandemic put a lot of things into perspective in a different way, and I think it affected everybody in that band and everything that was going on, and everyone was kind of pursuing their lives, and I didn't have anything in my life to pursue. So the only thing I knew how to do was try again and make more music. And Direct Hit's still around, we're playing fest and all that stuff. But, like, I don't know. I just wanted to put all my focus into something while I was locked up and inside. And it ended up being
the solutions,
because I don't know, I guess I never really gave it a fair shake. Like you said, a lot of people didn't know that we exist before the pandemic. A lot of people still don't know that we exist, just overall. But yeah, we had a record called Losing It. We had an EP called Never Punt. We did Losing It at Atlas Studios. Never Punt came out on Johann's Face Records, which if you listen to the Smoking Popes episode, that was what their first record came out on. I don't know. They were good stuff. It just wasn't, I just started focusing on direct hit and went, oh, fuck that shit.
You know, your lyrics, you as a person, you've always been very self-deprecating. I think a lot of us are. That don't take ourselves too seriously. But there is a breadth of talent within this band. I loved the live show. You're not a new band, but you remind me of a new band. You're hungry. You're going out there. And I wanted to feature you on the show for a lot of reasons, but one of them was the DIY approach. And, you know, you left Direct Hit or took a hiatus to you know.
Still in.
Right, but right. Yeah, but to really focus on the solutions. And it isn't just the connections you've got, you know, because we have plenty of friends less than Jake. We're not just going to take some band out if we don't feel there's something there. We don't like them as people, etc. But you know, you guys are the epitome of DIY. You're doing everything. And when I started talking to you that day, we went out about the recording process and how you put this together, because the track sounds awesome, and you pretty much piecemealed this thing together in your different home studios and. That is so cool, because, you know, when you first started recording music, you know, we didn't all have home studios. It wasn't affordable. Okay. Yeah. You were going to pay 50-100 bucks an hour in some studio, and you had your fingers crossed that the engineer was going to get what your band was about.
Yeah. I don't love the conventional studio approach because of exactly what you just said. It feels like a lot of like guessing and sniffing each other's butts, and by the time you get the scent, you've spent $2,000 and you don't have what you're looking for, and there's no like it doesn't feel like it's akin to like trial and error. And when we use the word home studios, we're being very generous. Like, I have a 2015 MacBook Pro, and whatever the what are they called, the DI box, whatever the DI box is that everyone makes fun of on TikTok, that's the one I have, and we've recorded our past three records DI, no amps, doing that. And you can't tell most of the time, unless you're like, if you're really listening for it, of course you can tell if you're snooping around, but for the average listener, no one's really fucking noticed or cared. And that to me was like eye-opening, because why bother? I mean, all these rap artists, all these like people coming up on social media and TikTok and shit are all just doing it on their MacBooks. And it's like, why can't we just do it on our MacBook? They have the right fucking idea. I should probably not age with, you know, the lack of grace. I should probably listen and look at what people are up to. And it's like, you could do it yourself. It's so much easier.
Yeah, you'd be surprised what comes across the podcast emails that we get from bands. It's just like, yeah, I recorded this in my bedroom on my MacBook. It's like, what?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. But I love that it's kind of, you know, made it fair play for everybody. You know, everyone can kind of have a chance. Back in the day, you had to have money to record, or you had to be really, really, really good to go in for an hour and record five songs or whatever. And we weren't that good, you know?
I mean, your records are amazing. You know, everyone does the thank you, and I mean it too. Thanks for having me on this fucking show. This is so cool. And your music is super inspiring to me. I don't know. We had to like piece it together. Otherwise there wouldn't be anything. Like, we had the Grieving Expectation came out before this new Sky EP, and that was technically done the same exact way, but we had Mike Kennedy from the All American Rejects mixing it. And once that record, what's the word I'm looking for? Didn't do great. We were like, okay, well, we don't have the money for Mike now, and we don't have the support from Pure Noise, so let's just fucking get somebody else who is also DIY. So we got Kelson Bjorski, who is our keyboardist's brother, and they did it for like no money. And as you said, it sounds amazing. It sounds like it's done in a fucking big studio, and it's just a bunch of bedrooms and decent mics and just kind of making it work.
Now, I understand that the drums, though, those were recorded Cave Recording. So that was the only thing that was done in what I'd call a drum room.
Totally. And that's me fucking that up, because that was the first time in like three records we've used real drums. We've triggered everything due to financial constraints. So Grieving Expectation, like those drums parts are what Ryan played, our former drummer at the time, but we had to program it because we just couldn't get money to go into a room and we couldn't get it to sound right with our own stuff. So yes, we did do that at Cave Recordings, which is an amazing place, and Kessel blasted through that stuff, our current drummer, in like a fucking day, and it was weird, but you hear that difference, I think. There's a humanity to it, and Vinny, who mixed it, or recorded those drums from Burst and Bloom, did an amazing job.
You know, I was really, really impressed that you guys, you know, you all did this yourselves, and it was DIY, and it just, you know, it sounds great. The song's a lot of fun. Can't wait till we dive into this, because there's so many different little pieces here that I'm hearing.
I just want to know, why did you choose this one? It's a very interesting choice, and I wanted, when you said it, I was kind of like, oh, okay. I wanted, because I've been listening and you do so much work and you dive in and you have such great questions and stuff. Why this one? It's so interesting because it's like probably the least performing song on this record.
You made a video for it, and I just was going through your stuff. I told you because there was a couple things that I wanted to share with you, some insight about the band, because again, I like you as a person, known you for a long time, and we just went out as friends and talked. And so prior to meeting you that day, I was just kind of going through all your videos, and this one came across, which this is track 4 out of 5 on your new EP. And okay, I got to ask you about the title. It's called Fine, a ska EP. But is it supposed to be Fine?
Yes.
A ska EP.
It is.
Okay, it's supposed to be like that, right?
Yeah. Because we've been trying to like find our way into a scene or whatever. And we always felt like we would really mesh well with the ska scene. But Grieving Expectations is a pretty weird record and isn't just a ska record. So I feel like people were still really cautious. And it was like we were like up a creek without a paddle. We didn't have a label. We didn't have anything. We had tried to pitch Grieving Expectation to Bad Time, and they're like, nah, not ska enough. So we had this like chip on our shoulder too, because we were like, we could do that. Fuck that. We're the best, and we could write a great ska record. And we did, and then sent the demos, which you got the demo of this song. And we sent them to Bad Time, and we're like, here, fucking check this out. And they're like, yeah, that is good. We'll definitely put it out. And it was like, yeah, so fine, you got it. We did it, and it's good, and you're fucking welcome.
And I'll tell you what I liked about the demo was, you know, because you're doing this at home, your ideas really didn't go further than the band. So the demo was pretty intact of what was there.
It's the same file. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. I was gonna say, did you take some parts like we're not gonna re-record that. That part sounds perfect. I've done that with demos. I've flown stuff into real recordings.
I think we re-recorded everything from the demo, but honestly, it wasn't like, it was just to tighten everything up. It wasn't out of like, not a lot, as you heard, like not a lot changed, added some parts and like overdubs and stuff, but no, it was really just to tighten it all up. But it also, like, I did it on like a Twitch stream one day. It was so uncasual how we went about recording it, and somehow it's turning out to be some of our strongest stuff. So it's really weird. Normally we'd be very like precise and stuff, and this one just felt very relaxed and cool. And yeah,
I've heard your other stuff. I even asked you, I said, how much editing went on with this, how much tuning with, because everything just sounds really good. And you know, to back up, you know, you were kind of, again, the self-deprecating thing, you know, why'd you have me on your show? You know, I really love the band.
I
love this song. This song's really cool. And
Thank you.
I could ever have a platform to help my friends out, you know, because trying to explain this in 30 seconds or less, and we talked about this a lot the day we went out. If you're in a touring band, you know, it is not cheap to get out there. Okay. It is not cheap to fill up the gas tank in that van, is not cheap to go out there and do what you're doing night after night. And There were some pretty long drives last run.
There's longer ones coming up, baby.
Yes. And you guys are in a van going all night, pulling up, setting up your gear. So I see the hard work behind it.
Thank you.
And I love it.
That's
and it's
so cool.
And it's inspired. And it's inspiring, but yeah, I saw this video. Check out the video, everybody. It's hilarious. It's just basically Devin sitting where he is now,
exactly,
looking bored. I did like how the video millennial was spelled wrong. There wasn't two N's in it.
We did talk about that too. This is the place where we finally get to mention it. I haven't even brought it up to the band. I've just been quietly waiting for someone to say something, and either they talked about it behind my back, or just didn't want to bum me out or something. But yeah, it's spelled wrong. It's spelled wrong everywhere.
I did notice, though, that it's spelled correctly on your Bandcamp page. Is it spelled correctly other places?
So we talk about that DIY thing, and that can lead to sometimes a lot of less eyes getting on things, and a lot of late nights remembering that you need to type in the word millennial to something. And
gotcha.
If it doesn't autocorrect, which it didn't, I guess it's a new enough word in some of them, and it just kind of went through. Everybody glanced at the video, didn't notice it was missing something. I texted Mike from Bad Time the day I was like, hey, did we do that? And it was just like, oh, we did that. And no one said anything. We just kind of walked away. So here, we broke the news. It's spelled wrong on Spotify and in the music video and in most of the promotional stuff.
Well, if that's the least of your problems, you're doing great.
Yeah. Spelling is for jerks.
Exactly. The track is 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Right off the top, there's what I'm calling a snare verb. The snare hits with a pop, 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 an echo on it. The drums, bass, and clean upstroke guitar come in. Trombone and trumpet. Trumpet's panned off slightly left. The bone's a little more on the right. The organ is panned slight right. This goes on for 16 bars, halfway through the intro. We get a full band stop. And that first stop is really indicative of the whole song. That stop happens a lot. It's kind of like a theme within this tune.
Yeah, it is. Honestly, it's a really easy device to get to the next part of the song, because then you have a second to just change it. And so
yeah,
that was kind of the original idea. It's also like directly ripping off a Planet Smashers vibe. I wanted to do the Planet Smashers have great slow songs, I think, that they never really get credit for. Wish I Were American, Giants, so on and so forth, that are very moody. And I wanted to emulate that with that part, too.
On this first stop halfway through, Devin, we get some guitar string noise panned off left. Now, when you're mixing stuff, that's a hard mute. You could just mute that out. Any mixer could do that. You could have done that in editing. You could have muted the noise out. I like the noise.
Yeah.
I like that it's there. It's breathing. It feels real.
I wish that Kelson could be here, because they're such they have such a great ear for that stuff. And Joram, our keyboardist, also edited it before it went to... And so both of them, joint brain, were like, nah, keep the noise. I think we really wanted to focus on this being we wanted to be a guitar band again. I think of Grieving Expectation, we were really a keyboard and bass kind of a band, which was sick. But I don't know, we change every record, who gives a shit? So we went back to being kind of like real punch you in the face, Andrew WK, Hives level guitars in the front. And I think that means they're noisy. They have to make noise.
I'm hearing the amp noise, but so I guess that what I was going to ask, that was a conscious decision, essentially.
I can't say yes or no. That would be a Kelson question. I'm going to assume with how precise dude is that yes, that was in there.
Okay.
'Cause there's a lot of stuff, and I can't wait to hear what else you have that was added, which I've heard a lot of people you've interviewed be like, well, as the songwriter, I wish I knew more about the mixing kind of a thing. Because it's like, yeah.
I feel you on that. That's happened with me with our songs. I'll get a mix and be like, what happened here? And you sometimes get, you don't know the exact chronological order of operations. Oh,
my mix notes are like some of the most embarrassing shit. I feel like I'm so, like, I'm just like, sounds great. I've said like, sounds great. And they're like, I didn't change anything. I'm like, cool. Sounds great. Like, I don't know. I don't have the brain to think about that stuff, and it's really why you have to put all of your trust and money into mixing. It's like the one one takeaway I've had with DIY is everything can be fixed in mixing. You just got to get someone who knows how to do it. All right, that's my...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the time, a bad song's a bad song, but if you have a halfway decent song and some of the tones are there, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, a good riff could sound great in a bad song kind of a thing, you know, and save that recording, I feel.
Sure. Well, halfway through, we get another 8 bars. The band continues on... There's like a Latin feel with this trumpet, okay?
Oh, the yeah, way cool. that it,
yeah, there's something very. I'm going to use the term again, Latin. I don't know how else to really describe it. Island feel, like it's.
I'm loving
was
this.
Was that conscious?
Yeah, okay. That is. I love to talk about it. That's our trumpet player Ian, who is a very unique style. He's like he underblows or whatever it's called. Again, I there's so much more talent than me, Chris. I'm the least talented member of this group, and he plays by down blowing down where I guess it's normally forward, and it creates that I almost think like early Aquabats kind of mariachi.
Well, it almost sounds like a mute. You ever seen those mutes on trumpets?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if I think we did the mute in the solo.
Yes.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if it was on during the whole process, because the horns actually recorded by themselves. This is the first time we did that, too. I wasn't there. It was just at our bass player's house in his studio, and we just wanted to let them breathe and be... Because there's also a saxophone mixed in there, too. That's our Brian, our sax player. And, like, that was the first time they ever got to play as a team. So it was like, let's right. let them handle it. And they came up with all this good ass shit. I can't even take credit for it. That horn line was in the demo. I technically wrote that, but they gave it character and life. And it's barely recognizable because of how much they put into it. Yeah. But that's Ian. Yeah. His play style.
Yeah. The horns sound great there. And then... right at the end of the intro, the band stops again, and we get that snare verb hit that's at the very beginning that comes back in again and leads us into verse one.
I think I stared at the screen again. I can't remember because the time tends to blend. Pixel images splashed onto my eyes and repeating patterns I internalize.
I think I stared at the screen again. I can't remember because the time tends to blend. Pixel images splashed onto my eyes and repeating patterns I internalize.
Yeah.
It's happening there.
Oh, that was so cool because I've been listening to it and I've wanted you to do that to our lyrics the whole time. It's staring at my phone. I went through a whole thing where I was just fucking on my phone for days. And you are when you, the DIY thing, we do all our own social media. I'm always editing video for stupid posts everywhere we go. And I just was staring at my phone. And I feel like I've cringed at everyone who's written a song about staring at their phone. But then it just, I don't know, it just made sense. The whole thing, time goes away, you look up, it's nighttime, you're sitting next to the person you love, and you have wasted hours of your life looking at nothing. And that, you know, it's just a repeating scroll over and over again, and it hits your brain, and then your brain feels good, and then you scroll again, and that's just what that is.
I've talked about on this show before believing a vocal or believing a lyric. You know, sometimes you hear stuff and it's like, oh, that was just contrived, that was just something somebody made up. But I don't know, man, just the way you deliver this vocal, it's just like, it's even if I didn't know you, it's believable. Okay, yeah, you were staring at the screen. It sounds real, which that's what it was. I got a question about the last line here. Pixel images splashed onto my eyes. It's an interesting lyric. It wasn't into my eyes, onto my eyes.
Yeah, you know, like when you stare at screens all day and then you shut your eyes and it's like in your brain. That's kind of what I was thinking about when I, because it's like you sit in your bed and they always say like, don't scroll on your phone in bed. It's like, well, fucking don't make my phone so entertaining. And you lose. So I'm looking at my phone and yeah, you shut your eyes and you try to go to sleep and you got that blue burn and you lie to yourself and get lenses for $70 more that say that they're not going to burn your eyes with it's a lie. It doesn't work, but you do it anyway. And yeah, that's okay. What that is. It's, I stare at screens a lot. I love staring at screens, but it's bad for you and it makes you crazy.
There's also that particular line. It's very jumbled. Okay. And I almost thought, well, he could have said pixel images splashed in my eyes, but it's like, it's like kind of jarring. But I also feel that that gives this character, it feels like somebody's kind of tripping over their words. Like I'm just stuck in this circular, you know, thing with my, with staring at my screen on my phone.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. That you nailed it. I don't know. Well, I love a lot of words, musical theater bullshit, background. Love it. Love, I don't know. I love character and delivery and stuff. So, I mean, as early as Oingo Boingo, you know, all that, just you kind of hear the vocals are their own performance too, kind of a thing, opposed to what drives the melody.
And Danny Elfman was a genius with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And
I've seen bands cite them as influences. Skank and Pickle comes to mind.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to Oingo Boingo in a second. I think you know where it's coming. But
right on the
third line, pixel images splashed onto my eyes. On that line, the organ comes in. Prior to that, it's drums and bass only for the first two lines. Sounds like double vocals here. Did you double the lead?
I don't know. So we definitely, the way we record vocals is we'll do a bunch of takes and then comp it. Especially with this one, we tried to do like very little auto-tune and editing. Not because I don't like it. I love auto-tune. I think it's a fun tool. I just think that we wanted to, again, try and get back to like rock punk in a album. We were making a genre record, so we kind of wanted it to sound like that genre, essentially. So that was off topic. I'm sorry. I get a little tangential. No, I don't think we did them. We did record what could be used as doubles, but I generally hate doubles. But then I get back to the mixing notes thing where I'm like, it sounds great. So there's a good chance Kelson added them there. But normally I don't.
I have another question that's just been kind of perplexing me. When you have as many cooks in the kitchen as you do with a band like yours, meaning everyone's recording in their home studios, you're trusting, like you just mentioned, your horn players, they recorded separately.
Yeah.
You're trusting each one to get proper levels, make sure that the track's not clipping. I mean, let me tell you, I talk to like mixers that mix for like the superstars, and these guys are like, you'd be surprised the tracks that I get back, stuff peaking, stuff just all over the place. So I guess what I'm saying is you have to, you know, trust your band members to deliver something that's gonna sound good. Has there ever been an issue with doing it that way?
No, honestly, I always make the joke we're the best band in the world, but I mean it. Like, they are all so talented and so reserved and so understanding.
That's awesome.
Of the goal. I mean, the calling it Devin K and the Solutions is just because it sounds cool to me. I'm not, obviously, if everybody quit, I'd try and keep going or something, but they are the band. They are like, they help a lot. They helped write a lot of these songs on this EP. So it is more of a band than I think people outside looking in would think. But yeah, it's just, I want to be the lead clown.
Yeah, well, and I didn't realize how much of a band it was till we sat down that day.
Yeah.
I mean, I had seen the band play, but even your promo picture is a take of Huey Lewis in the News with Sports. You're standing at the bar, like on the front cover, which that's kind of how you explained to me. You're like, no, the Solutions, like they're part of this. They can't be replaced. They're my band. You know, I'm just kind of like the face, the Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
I mean, and he had like the hottest band and they all had names for themselves. I don't remember them right now.
But yeah,
you know what I mean, like they were their own, and all the members of this band have their own things. They all have their own bands that are fucking really great, and they all have their own projects, and it's just lucky that we all like hanging out, playing together, and making
cool.
A little bit of money. So it's been sick.
Hey everybody, we got to take a real quick break for a few words from our sponsors, but we'll be right back with lots more with Devin K.
Hello out there!
Yes, hello out there everyone, I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
Hey, it's Chris DeMakes, a podcast producer, Chris Fafalius. Will you do me a favor real quick? Go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe to One Hit Thunder. It's the show that I host with my good buddy Matt Kelly, where we have guests from the world of music and comedy and art, and together we dive deep into a band or artist that people consider a one-hit wonder and decide if they brought the thunder or were just a blunder. You'll laugh, you'll learn, maybe you'll get mad at us. Who knows? We have an enormous back catalog that includes episodes about Eagle Eye Cherry, Stacey Q, Looking Glass, The Weather Girls, Tag Team, Four Non-Blondes, Martika, Krayshawn, Sixpence None the Richer. I could go on and on, but how about you just subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods and experience the fun for yourself. And now, back to the show.
There's a big guitar swell that's panned off to the right on the word internalize in verse one that leads us right in to pre-chorus one. And I love what goes on here. This might be the coolest part in the song. What I love about it is it couldn't be any different from the verse and it couldn't be any different from the chorus. I just love where this part sits.
I internalize.
It's hard to think about all the time I've lost.
The lyric is, it's hard to think about all the time I've lost every single night. It's hard to think about.
Halloween. Yeah, yeah. It's
well, the band is very staccato. There's multiple voices going on here. Drums, bass, and stereo guitars. And this is where I had written, oh, there's horns here as well. I don't hear the organ in this section, but this part vocally reminds me very much of Oingo Boingo or Fishbone.
Yeah. We were definitely going for ripping off This Is Halloween.
The brim with fright. This is Halloween. This is Halloween. 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 Halloween.
It was like it started as a joke because I just, when I was writing out the skeleton of the song, I was like, I'm just going to go minor. That sounds cool. And then just that gets us to the chorus kind of a thing. And then we just jazzed it up and made it. And then someone went, hey, that kind of sounds like This Is Halloween. So it's like, well, let's fucking reference it because there's only 12 notes and I think it sounds cool.
I love it. And when the two chords are going back and forth, and I don't have my guitar on me, I went through this a bunch, but when the two chords are going back and forth, da na na na, before we get into chorus one, I love how it picks up with the note of, it goes back to the one basically, and it's just such a cool thing how the chorus starts on that. What's happening here lyrically? It's hard to think about all the time I've lost every single night. Basically, I guess what you just said, it's 7 hours later, you're next to your significant other going, I haven't done anything.
Yeah, that's it. It's so funny. This one is so, I always try to write like complicated bullshit and like stuff that I think is like poetic, and this one is literally me farting out how much I'm so pissed at myself for just being on my phone so much, but also pissed at myself for fucking loving it. Like, it just feels so nice. It tickles some part of your weird little human brain, and it's very frustrating.
Something else about this track reminds me, not a specific part, but just the overall vibe, and I think it has to do with the Chicago thing, but I'm hearing Blue Meanies in here too.
Ooh, I'm not crazy well versed in their catalog, but I obviously
interesting.
Yeah, but I know that they're, but I like them. Like, Smash the Magnavox is like one of the coolest fucking ripper,
oh, yeah,
ripper tunes. I'm actually really bad on like classic Chicago bands, because I got to Chicago kind of later when a lot of them had like jump ship. I'm also like, I don't like classic rock, so I'm not gonna, I have this like theory, I'm like, I just want to listen to what's happening like right now kind of a thing. So I don't go back as much as I should, but then I've gone back. Who was the one I just listened to Slapstick for the first time in the van on the tour that we were just on.
Wow,
and
that's interesting.
I was like, wow, okay, this fucking rules. I should have listened to this sooner. I get why people like it. But Yeah, it's weird. When it's summer in your backyard, I think sometimes you resent it because you hear about it all the time. And you're like, oh my God, are we going to hear about slapstick again at a Chicago show? And it's like, well, no, there's a reason we still hear about it because it's fucking good, dummy. And yeah.
That's awesome. Well, 45 seconds in, we hit chorus one. I am getting this feeling. I'm drowning in open air. I am thinking about giving in. This is a single chorus. What's going on?
Lyrically, it's kind of the response to like when you work really hard on something and it gets buried by the algorithm and you're watching like everyone around you get a million likes and you start judging yourself. It's very suffocating and weird and strange and just a very unique thing of that seems to be amplified by each generation. So like, I feel like what I'm feeling about that anxiety, the generation below me is probably feeling it way fucking worse. And it's, yeah, it's just this like chokehold because you have to rely on social media so much, especially as like before the pandemic. This band didn't like do a bunch of tours. We just kept fucking putting stuff on the internet and watching stuff fail and stuff work. And I don't know if anything's really worked. We're just, more people are checking it out. So
no, yeah. Something's working, you know, we got a lot of great mail through Less Than Jake about you guys
cool.
Having the band out. But
your fans are the nicest fucking fans. I've gone on to like message boards. I've been a part of some of the, like, there's a LTJ vinyl discography because I found a weird old record of yours that I wasn't sure where it was printed. I asked a bunch of questions. Your fans are fucking cool. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. Thanks for saying that. And I agree. We've had more bands than I can count echo your sentiment.
Yeah.
They just said that it's a great crowd to play in front of. Chorus one's great. It's a single chorus. After the I am, you get an I am call and response. That's really cool. Second line, I am, we get a harmony on am and we get a harmony on giving in. I'm also hearing these choruses doubled. Okay. I think that was in the mixing that happened. Drums, bass, stereo guitars, horns, and organ are all in here. This chorus is the poppiest part of the song. For some reason, it doesn't sound anything like Blink, but it reminds me of something around Enema of the State that they would, like Hoppus would have sang. It's like a Hoppus song.
Hell yeah.
And I love how different this chorus, I mentioned a little bit ago, how much different this is coming off of that pre-chorus. The horns, organ, drums, bass, stereo guitars, everything is rocking here. And there is also, talking about those stops, there's guitar noise panned off right at the top of the chorus after the stop out of the pre-chorus. So we are getting those little happy accidents left in. They weren't muted. They weren't taken out. Right out of chorus one, we're in an 8-bar re-intro. When the stop happens here, there's no noise at all. It sounds like a clean edit here, or you guys were just really, really quiet individually on your parts. And we get that verb snare into verse two. Was that verb snare talked about a lot as being kind of like a hook within the song, or is that something you didn't think about? And was that verb snare treated like that, or was it treated like that in the mix?
Oh, wow. It was definitely, it was conscious when I was setting up the song. I just wanted to have, there's a Real Big Fish song, I think it's like Rocket with I or something, where it's like they do kind of a dubby kind of a feel, I think I was thinking about during that.
I want you to rock it with 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 I.
And also, I thought it just being silent would be weird, so why not celebrate the ska thing and put the verby dub snare in there. And I think when we recorded it pretty dry and had Kelson add it, the verb later. Because in the mix process, I think one of the only things I asked for was like, and I probably typed it just like this, like a jackass, was like, more dubby snare, man. Like, I don't know. I have the worst notes. They're terrible. So
you got your dubby snare. It definitely, definitely comes across. And then we're into verse two.
I can't even tell.
I have a headache and my neck hurts as well. I feel I've given nothing to the god in the screen. I'm not feeling worthy for the love of a machine. It's hard
to- I love what happens in verse two, because your delivery is different than verse one. The hi-hat and bass are the only thing in on this verse until a snare hit brings the drum, bass, and stereo lead guitars that follow the bass. I love on that last line that the guitars come in and basically are mimicking the bass there. It's really cool.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. I don't know. With the whole Find a Sky EP, we wanted to touch like every corner. So all of the songs started with like names of other bands that we were like kind of calling to. And this one was the Plant Smasher one, which has a Fall Out Boy chorus, I guess. And it was like kind of what we were ripping off. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like we couldn't have done it without putting something like this in here. And we've never really done that as a band where it's just bass, essentially. We've never really stripped it down that hard, and so I think lifting it before it lifts again was like just a cool move. I don't know.
Well, and a lot of times, and I've talked about this. I can't remember what song or songs it was, but I've talked about it. A lot of times, a song, it'll be stripped down the first verse. That'll be where the hi-hat and the bass are. The second verse, it'll be bass with the drums, but it's flipped here. You get the drums in on the first verse. It's kind of broke down in the second verse, but I think it's really neat.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. You're really good at that. You're really good at making me think about songs different. So thanks.
Well, yeah. No, if there's no wrong or right, but a lot of times you're like, oh, we'll save the drums. It'll get heavier for verse two. And this is the exact opposite, but it's really great.
Yeah,
it's cool.
I think it puts it in a really raw place, because it's complaining about something really stupid. It's complaining about something that's very easily fixed. You put your phone down and you walk away from it, and yet here I am like making this fucking like, oh my god, like what a tortured life I lead because I look at TikTok videos all day. It's
the human race's biggest addiction. I was in the airport like 2 days ago, and I'm staring at just everybody. I actually put my phone on for a second. I'm like, nobody even reads newspapers or magazines anymore. Everyone's staring at their phone.
There's just so like, much stuff on there, Chris. It's great.
It is. It's great, and it's absolutely awful at the same time. Yep. Because you wrote a song about it. The lyric in verse two. I think I learned something. I can't even tell. I have a headache and my neck hurts as well. I feel I've given nothing to the god in the screen. I'm not feeling worthy for the love of a machine. On the first line, even tell, we get a call and response vocal that starts off left but pans right. I love the effect that happens there. Second line, hurts as well. Same effect, starts off left, then comes back right. Then on that third line, we get that snare hit that I was talking about that brings the drums back in. Also on the third line, we get these oohs, these vocals that come in. They're pan both left and right. The oohs come in there, kind of haunting. Just where they kind of sit in the mix. And was that in the original demo? I can't recall.
I don't think so. The little like wraparound, that's all Kelson. That was one of those things that when we got the mix back, all of us were like, oh fuck, like that fucking rules. And like by this time, all the songs were sequenced in order, and maybe not all at once. I can't remember. Oftentimes we send stuff out as we're working on it because everything we do comes out really fast because we don't know how to work any other way. And we had the deadline. We wanted to get it on vinyl before we went on tour with you. And luckily we were able to do that. So essentially Kelson's working down this list and a couple of the mixes come through and we're like, really play, like really have fun. Like do what you would want to do in a record like this, being a fan of this genre of music. And by the time this one came, stuff like that was all over the place and it really made the song fucking great. So good job to Kelson. And then there was the other thing you asked about. What was it? Oh, shit.
The ooze?
The ooze, yes. Those were done on what I call like idiot day, where everything will be done. And then I'll take what I have and go to the practice space with like an SM58 and like a guitar and a DI box. And I'll just add whatever comes to my brain. And if it sticks, then we keep it. If it's garbage, they cut it. And I don't ask any questions. And those oohs were one of those. It just felt like I love vocals. It's like my favorite thing. And it just felt like it needed something to fill the space, and it added a haunting effect, which I didn't intend, which is cool.
It does, and again, I'm going to talk about what's going on here in terms of, it's not perfectly tight. That's not what you're going for, but this track is not out of tune. There's a lot of stuff that, how do I say this? You almost have an indie rock thing about you too. I don't know if that makes sense or not. There's this, you know, non-polished thing that, again, when I heard this track, I was really surprised at how tight and how everything sounded. And it wasn't like I pictured it to be out of tune and all over the place, but this is one of the tightest productions I've heard from you.
That's fucking awesome. Again, Kelson, give it up for Kelson. Give it up for Joram editing it. Give it up for us recording it and producing it ourselves. I don't know. It's just really weird. It came together quick. It came together pretty seamlessly. We had done an entire record this way before, and I think we learned a lot. And we just kind of, all the stuff that we were worried about before, we just got over worrying about. Like, that's how, you know, we were just able to let the band record it themselves. They're going to know what to do. And if they don't, then we cut it out and no one gets offended. And that's kind of the mentality. You can always try, you know, and if it sucks, we'll just cut it. No one's going to die. It'll be great.
Well, pre-chorus too. It's the same staccato instrumentation with the big stereo guitars, the drums and the bass, and the vocal.
The love of our machine.
It's hard to think about how I do this shit every single night.
It's hard to think about how I do this shit every single night. And it's a lyric change from pre-chorus one. And also, I noticed something in the credits for this song I wanted to talk about. Is Mike Sosinski the bad guy voice in this part? And if so, who's Mike Sosinski?
No, so Mike plays the bad guy on our song Pump Fake.
Okay.
I think we just copied and pasted it into the credits of it.
Gotcha. Okay. But, so Mike wasn't on this song.
No, he didn't make the cut on this one. We were like, no, we're going to be the bad guys. That was like, we sang that like with our hands linked, like we were doing like a Monty Python like theater like thing, or like the do this shit every, like we did it one take.
Oh man, and God, this is so Monty Python now that you just hit me over the head with that.
Yeah, it's that theater shit. And then and we had done it one way where we just sang it kind of the gang vocals like the demo. And then I think it just was like we were drinking a beer and it was a goof. And then it was like, no, like, fuck that. The goofs are usually like, we held a lot of the goofs back out of our last record. Like, and we kind of felt like at times it was flat. So why not put the goofs in? We're a goofy group of people. And I think it paid off. I think it doesn't come across as goofy when you hear it. But
no.
I might be wrong.
No, I don't think so. It comes across to me as anthemic. It's just really fun. This pre-chorus is really, really fun. And it's kind of like a party. We get the noise panned off right at the stop here, which is, this is like the probably the fourth or fifth stop in the song, kind of a running theme, as I mentioned at the top. We're into chorus two. This is a double chorus as opposed to chorus one. We get the same instrumentation basically here.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting this feeling. I'm drowning it up in air. Oh, yeah, I'm thinking about giving in. Oh, yeah, I'm getting this feeling there. It's going out of here. Oh, yeah, I'm thinking about giving in.
On the first line, I am getting this feeling. I'm drowning in open air. I am thinking about giving in. We get the harmony on getting this feeling. I'm drowning in open air. We get the harmony on I am and giving in. And then we get a clean stop halfway through chorus two to pick up on the back half. And this is a new lyric. You really growl this. I am. It's really guttural. I am getting this feeling. There is no way out of here. I am thinking about giving in. So the last line is the same. Talk to me about that. Did you think that last line just needed to be said again? Or, you know, considering the lyric, I am getting this feeling, there is no way out of here. That was a new lyric, but you wanted to keep the last line the same?
I just think that changing the chorus lyrics, and you talk about this a lot on your show with other people, the chorus lyrics to me, I love when people do that. Every time I hear someone do that on here, I feel so validated. I don't know. I think the chorus is the most repeated part of the song, and it gets fucking blasted into your brain that it's nice to sing the same thing a different way. And sometimes when you sing it a different way, it just, that's the money part, you know, like that's the part that you almost sing more. You sing it over the other part and then you're like, oh fuck, I gotta wait, like kind of a thing. And that's what that really felt like. It's the same sentiment. It's the same, like, oh my God, I'm so tired of like posting stuff on the internet and getting nothing and being a fucking feeling like a loser and all this shit. But yeah. And then the shift in like the stop is a little bit more dramatic. That was just kind of trying to show off, I think. I think it's also like Relient K or Fall Out Boy-esque was what we were kind of going for. Everything on this record is so ska that we are still kind of a pop punk band. And it was like, well, this chorus is got it. It's like super, let's pop punk it up. There's still a bunch of shit ska, not shit ska, shit ton of ska over it. So yeah, maybe some shit ska. I don't fucking care.
Some shit ska. Yeah, yeah. It also sounds like on this back half here of chorus two, Devin, that sounds like more voices join the party on these last couple lines. It seems like it just gets bigger vocally.
Oh yeah. I've been wanting to like bring this up. There's that little like, in the background, yeah. We call that, we had like a dumb name for it. We call it like stump backing. It's like Patrick Stump is just like the yeah, like he does all that shit. And I fucking love it. I make fun of it only because I'm fucking jealous. And and we were like, this part, like I wanted to sing the main vocal that way. So it was Joram was engineering it. I was in her bedroom with like it screaming into the closet. And I was like, I want to sing it that way. I wanted to be like, oh, yeah, I'm getting this. Oh, no, yeah. And it was just, it didn't feel right. So she's like, why don't just like put it in the back? And I was like, we're just going to stump back that. And so we did. And it actually ended up sounding really cool. But it is just me going, that's it. And it,
wow.
And yeah.
I wouldn't have known that. It just gets fuller there. I really like it. And then we get into the bridge. And this section is just so cool. It drops a half step to F minor and goes back and forth with the E minor there. Okay. That drop in that half step is so peculiar,
yeah.
But it's so cool. It's such a great part. Reminds me of, I don't know if you were into these bands, but it reminds me of Mr. Bungle or Faith No More around Angel Dust. Do you hear that at all, this part?
Now that you mention it, kind of, which is so funny. I make fun of Mr. Bungle a lot for that, and I feel like it's coming around, like, to bite me in the ass. Yeah, no,
well,
that's
you
right.
You keep talking about how this is your ska EP and this is a ska song. This song, to me, doesn't really even get ska. Yeah, the horns at the top, whatever, but until the end, the last chorus, when that pickup, that clean, you know, ska guitar, I'll call it, comes in, which we'll get to in a little bit. But this part, just like I said, Mr. Bungle, kind of something off Angel Dust, one of the first couple songs off that record, is just kind of quirky and weird.
That's so funny. I love it.
We get drums, bass, and upstroke guitar, trumpet panned off left. It sounds like the bone and the sax are maybe more right. The organ is panned off right. And there's also some new single note organ stuff, it sounds like, happening off to the right.
Yeah. Joram is an incredible keyboardist. And I think right when we started working on this, she got her... the Nord, is that the one that everyone loves? That's, yeah, I think she had and was just dialing it in on the Nord, if I'm not mistaken. And so we were just excited. We were really, when her and I were working on some of the songs together, we were really looking up like YouTube piano ska, like how to play ska. We were watching videos of Esteban from Cat Bite and Matamoska, and we were just like, we should pay tribute to ska, do the organ stuff right. And then that was kind of how that came from. So I think there's a lot of doubling of the organ in that part. And then she put this haunted house part over the trumpet solo. And it just sounds fucking cool.
It is awesome. This is also the part, Devin, I was referring to, at least the first six bars here with the trumpet. It almost sounds like he has the mute on. And for those listening and don't know what I'm talking about, there's a basically, it's like a, usually it's black. It's like a black, about the size of a baseball, but it's not, how would you even describe it? It's almost shaped.
Like a toilet plunger.
Like a plunger that you put in your horn and it gives it this sound. Was that used there or an effect, or is that how he blows? Because you mentioned he has a unique way to blow into the trumpet.
I think, and it was, again, because they were alone, I'm pretty sure we had discussed using a mute on it, because we've used mute before on it.
It sounds killer.
It sounds great. I love it. Ian killed it. I don't know. He's good. He's good. He's a good boy. But I'm pretty sure it was a mute. I'm pretty sure.
Well, everything we were talking about, the horns, the organ, this goes on for six bars here in the bridge. On bars 8 through 10, the big stereo guitars come in mimicking the pre-chorus from earlier, but we're in a different key.
Yeah.
The big band stop here before the modulation happens. There is some noise panned off right. We get another stop. There's some noise over there. We get in to chorus 3. Same lyrics as chorus 2 here. And if there was a spot to change it up, and again, did you think about changing it up here, or you wanted to keep it the same?
There was a lot happening there already. Like, we punched him in the face with a Halloween part, and then we stop,
yeah,
and we do this big key change, which I'm not even sure how many steps it is either which way. It just was, when writing it, it sounded cool.
Yeah, you went down like 5 half steps. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of, sometimes I like when I'm writing a song to just put my hand somewhere else, if just like shut my eyes and try it, and then sometimes it works.
I got a level with you. The first time I heard it, I'm like, ooh. And the second time I heard it, it was like, The third time was like, that's really interesting. And the fourth time, it's like, it's cool, man. It's quirky, it's different, but I really like it. I think it's awesome.
It's really weird to end the song and then start the song again. Your brain has, like, it fucks it up. It sounds like we slow it down just because it's such a drastic change, like, sonically.
Yeah.
It's really weird. It fucked with us a lot. It still fucks with us when we tried and play it, which we're eventually going to add it to the set. It's a hard one to sing, too.
Yeah, no, it's great. The halfway through, we get that stop again with some amp noise that happens there. On the third line, I am getting this feeling there's no way out of here. There's a cool, higher voice that comes in on that line.
That's Joram. This is the first time she's been singing along with me. A lot of it was either our old drummer Ryan or me harmonizing myself, which I lazily do on the demo. But it was just kind of like everything else. It was like, why would I do it myself? I'm just going to let her do it. And she comes up with great stuff. And it's really nice, because that's what we sound like live now, which was kind of the backwards way. We used to write and then record and then be like, well, what's the live version going to be like? Let's make it different. Now this one was like,
yeah,
Let's play the damn fucking songs. And it seems like it worked.
I love the harmony there. This big modulation goes to E flat here, which this whole part, again, it took me a second to digest it. But once I did, I think it's really cool. Halfway through, Devin, these guitars come in. It's like, but it almost sounds like they're going out of tune. It's like, it's like everything's going off the rails for a second. Then it gets pulled back in.
I love that effect. We use that a bit. It's like like the record slowdown effect. So like,
yeah.
We basically like slow down. That's like the biggest digital effect on it, is that we would just play it, let it ring, and then I would slide down on guitar a little bit and the bass would slide down. But then we amped it up to 11 with using this little tool that slows it down. Then it just kind of, I don't know, it gives it a real big pickup. And it was like, how do you get another fucking big pickup after we just did the last big pickup? And that was what felt right. Yeah.
I will tell you, it's unconventional and it's a bit jarring.
Oh, yeah.
in a cool way. Now that I said it a second ago, now that I've digested it, but the first time I heard it, like, what is going on here? It's like, are they deliberately trying to do a train wreck, which I think you were, but
yeah,
it doesn't come off as a four-letter word train wreck. It comes off as a cool train wreck. I love that the outro of the song is basically the intro, but now the big stereo guitars are in.
Yeah.
It's not the upstrokes here. It's so cool. It's an 8-bar outro in the new key, and it ends what I'm calling, you may have heard me say this on the show before, it ends on the suspense note, which is the B flat here. It doesn't resolve to E flat. I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah.
I love that it kind of, I call it the cliffhanger. You're like, okay.
Yeah, Motion City Soundtrack does that a lot. And I love that. I mean, a lot of Ben Blink does that a lot, actually, that I think about it. I was noticing that the other day. It's like a trick. It's like a parlor trick. Music is just little tricks that you learn. And most of the like fancy stuff, nobody notices. You could be like the best classical guitar player. And until you do that, like, no one gives a fuck. It's so funny. Yeah, it's always the simplest thing. You were talking about I don't know what the name for it is either. When you hit the high strings and it does that really high squeal, that makes everybody go like, that's the coolest shit I've ever heard. And it's like, you're not even playing a note. Like, yeah.
You don't even know how to play guitar. As long as you know how to do that, people think you're cool.
Oh yeah. Noise is so much cooler than notes.
Well, listen, a couple things. Thanks for sitting in and combing through your song. To everybody listening, go check out Devin Kay and The Solutions, one of the hardest working bands out there right now. This track, don't want to sound like I don't like your other stuff or didn't like the other material you have, but there's something about this one that I really gravitated towards. I know that's kind of surprising to you. I think the video is hysterical. I really, really like the song. It's quirky. For what it's worth, I was mowing my yard today and I couldn't get the chorus out of my head over and over and over again over the noise of the motor. It was pretty cool. But again, thank you so much. I totally dig the song. I think it's original. I love your DIY ethic. I like how you all recorded this in separate places. It's really cool. You have a lot of trust in your bandmates, and they all delivered solid tracks. You should be really proud. And what do you got for the listeners? What would you like to leave everybody? What's coming up with Devin Kay and The Solutions going forward?
Well, I didn't say Jacob or Castle's name in the podcast, and I want to make sure that I did. They are also in the band and wonderful and lend their talents to every song. And Jake, there's a lot of us. But what am I up to? We finished the best tour in the world with you. That was super successful. We made a bunch of money. And then we've got Fest. We've got more tours that we're announcing soon. I think we're trying to get people to hear our tunes now. So, you know, you were like, not this one song stood out to you. Well, there's something for everybody. So go check it out. We're a very diverse band. I'm on Twitch. I'm really good at that. It's really fun. Very entertaining. Watch it if you like video games, Pokemon cards, nerd shit. It's all about all that. We have a great YouTube channel. That's it. We're the best. Please listen to us.
You are the best. Check out their new EP. It's called Fine, a ska EP. And catch you down the road, my friend.
Yes, thank you. Keep it sleazy.
Feels like the start of a good time. I wouldn't be so sad. Well, a glass half full of shit. Did I do that bit? Oh, fuck, that's sad. I don't need to wonder.
Hey, everybody. I hope you had fun with Devin Kay. But don't worry. The fun continues on Krista Makes a Podcast after a few words from our sponsors.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is The Headaches, a three-piece punk rock band from North Devon, UK. Consisting of Charlie Charlesworth on vocals and drums, Ming on the bass, and Sam Everly on guitar and vocals. Their debut album, 8-Step Guide to Sobriety, is out now. Here's a snippet of their song, Go, Go, Go.
doesn't feel right. Gonna go, go, go to the pub tonight. Go, 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 but I can't get there. Go, go, go to the pub tonight. Go, 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 but I can't get there now. Something's wrong.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So, Chris, it's pretty amazing in 2023 what you can do and what you've been able to do for a lot of years now in a bedroom with some decent mics and a MacBook, isn't it?
It is. Technology wasn't around when my band started. It wasn't around for quite a while. Studio time was ridiculous. We would go to studios that people were charging an exorbitant amount of money for, and they didn't know much more than we did. We didn't know that at the time, but it was just some guy just taking a guess and throwing a mic up to an amp and just, you know, pushing the fader up type stuff. But yeah, they are the epitome, this band, of DIY. I wanted to give them a shot on the show. I wanted to get them on here. Devin's been cranking it out for many years. He's logged in some hours. He's paid his dues, and I just love the track. I told him I love the song and I'd love to talk about it.
Yeah, I think the Oingo Boingo and, you know, the comparisons you were making were very warranted. They were right, you know? It definitely feels like it belongs in that world, and I think that's awesome. I love that stuff. Yeah, the DIY recording, man. I will say the one thing, which I guess wasn't a problem for them, but it's definitely been an issue for, you know, my band along the way, is sometimes when you have no time limitations, yeah, you are saving a lot of money, but when you have no restrictions on how much time you can spend on something, sometimes it tends to go on forever and you don't know when to say that's enough, you know?
That's a great question. I wish I would have asked him that, because you're right. It's like, and conversely, it could be the other thing. It's like, hey, dude, where's that backing vocal? Where's that backing vocal? When are you gonna do that? When are you gonna send it over? Yeah. You know, oh, I'll get to it. You know, it's kind of, you get complacent because you know, you're not on the time constraint of a label or a budget.
I know, man. I know. It's so funny that what you're talking about, I'm literally experiencing right now with my band. There's things where it's like, are you gonna do those backup vocals or not? Are you ever going to do those? We'd like to finish these songs, you know? So yeah, that can be the issue sometimes, but it is funny. I laugh, Chris, about what we spent to record like the first couple Punchline albums back in the day. Like, we spent more 20 some years ago to record than we do now, because we had to spend $40 or $50 an hour in a studio. It was ridiculous. I'm sure you experienced that many times.
Oh, absolutely. And back in the day, you know, especially with the major labels, all the producers in the studios, everyone out in, you know, especially out in LA, they were all in cahoots with one another. So it's,
yeah, I'm
it's
sure.
Like, oh yeah, here, we'll give the band, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 to go record a record that's going to sound like a demo with this guy. You know, it's the whole business has changed. The bottom line here is that, you know, DIY has been around since, you know, forever. You know, my band followed that ethic definitely early on, and I saw this band out there. They're just out there killing it night after night. They're showing up long drives, they're in a van, they're humping their own gear, they're hustling their own t-shirts, and you know, the day that I went out to lunch with Devin, we just had a heart to heart. I was just basically like, you know, picking his brain, like, what's going on with your band, like, what are you trying to do? Because it really did surprise me, because his you know, band that's, you know, still together but not doing what they were doing, Direct Hit, they had a lot of upward momentum, and I really thought that you know, something was going to be happen further with those guys, and it didn't. But man, he's just he's out there doing the grind, and I'm happy for him.
And it's true, Chris, because I've experienced it many times now. Less Than Jake fans are very cool. They've always been great to my band. Like, countless people tell us they saw us for the first time with Less Than Jake, and that's cool that Devin Kay is getting to experience that now too. Also, hey, two more things I want to mention about this episode. One, when it comes to the DIY recording thing, it does seem like you should go to the studio and record your drums. Mm-hmm. That's pretty important. Unless you're really good at, you know, miking up the drums and you have a really great room. That is the one, the most important, is to get, you know, good drum sounds on a DIY recording. I'm sure you would agree with that.
Yeah, and definitely in rock and in metal and things like that. Although, you know, Devin mentioned it, their last couple of projects, I guess they were doing MIDI and triggers, and man, I'm telling you, I hear some stuff, I can't really tell the difference. It's you know, right. But they did go and get a good good drum sound at a studio, and again, I'm just impressed that they were all able to, you know, you get these files back. You're like, man, you recorded the horn too hot, or you recorded this, you know, this file's corrupt, or, you know.
Right. And Chris, I had a question for you. I don't think I've ever asked you this. It's pretty funny. He was talking about how in his band, when it comes to mixing, he's the guy that's like, sounds great. And I got to be honest with you, I'm kind of that guy in my band. Like, I feel like there's so many cooks in the kitchen that have so many opinions about things that unless something is really glaring, I'm usually like, hey, it sounds good. We hired this person to mix this for a reason. Whereas all my bandmates always have a big, long list of notes. Where do you fall personally on that scale of notes? Do you give a lot of notes? Do you have a few notes? How much of a stickler are you?
Man, I wish I'd get a mix back. There's been a couple times where I've just been like, I have nothing to say about it. It's perfect. Uh-huh. There's other times where it's just all over the place. Most of the times now, the people we're working with, it's in the ballpark. You might have to do one or two, maybe three recalls, you know, and usually the recalls are just like little vocal, you know, vocal ups or vocal down type things. But I drive my band crazy in the 11th hour. You know, I'll listen to everybody. I want to hear what everybody else says first. Okay. He agrees with me. He agrees. He's saying the same thing. Yeah, the snare has to come up. But then I get nitpicky, and that's when I drive them nuts. Yeah. And it should be no surprise, anybody that listens to this podcast, how nitpicky I can get.
Well, I'm nitpicky about podcast editing for sure. When I listen to like a poorly edited podcast, it drives me crazy. Like, I'm like, I can't listen to this. There's no effort put into this. But with music, I just think that's because I've been lucky enough that I feel like we're working with great people. We're working with great producers, great mixers, and I trust their part of that more. If it sounded bad, I'd have a million notes. I think I'm just lucky enough that I feel like it usually sounds pretty good, you know? So I think that's my deal. But hey, man, I think this song from Devin K sounds great, and I thought this was a great episode, and I had a lot of fun listening to it. Devin was a very energetic and entertaining guy, and I'm sure that translates on stage as well.
And speaking of energetic guys, that's basically how you would describe Chris and I. And if you want to hear more of our energetic speak, you can go over to chrisdemakes.com. It's basically our Patreon. It's called Supporting Cast. chrisdemakes.com, and for the price of a cup of coffee or two, and I say two because depending if you buy the one cup of coffee, you'll get a bonus episode called The After Party bi-weekly. And if you buy us two cups of coffee, essentially, pay for two cups of coffee, you'll get four bonus episodes, one every week called The After Party, where Chris and I expound on everything from dates back in history to top 100s in music to the episode in question that week and everything else in between. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have a blast doing The After Party with you, man. It's this whole other podcast we do that maybe a lot of people haven't checked out. Once in a while, I throw a sneak preview episode like in the feed of Krista Makes a Podcast. So if you need further proof, go scroll through our back catalog on here. You'll find one. It says sneak preview in all capital letters. You can check out an episode or two of The After Party and see if you want to support Krista Makes a Podcast at chrisdemakes.com. We'd appreciate it. Your support helps us continue making the show that you love.
Absolutely. And give Chris Fafalios, F-A-F-A. F-I-O-S? No, F-A-F-A-L-I-O-S. Jeez.
L-I-O-S.
Yeah, L-I-O-S. Fafalios? No, Fafalios. Chris Fafalios at Instagram. He'd love to have you follow him. And so would I. I'm at Less Than Chris D. And I want to thank this week's guest, Devin K, for sitting in with us. And we'll catch you all next week.
Krista Makes a Podcast producer, Chris Fafalios here. Do you enjoy music documentaries? I think I've watched every VH1 Behind the Music ever. Whether I was super familiar with the artist or not, I was always fascinated with the story. Well, that's what inspired me and my friends to create the DocuPodcast. I think I just invented that term. A band called Punchline, which, yeah, it's the story of the band that I've been in for like 70% of my life now. But we approach the story in a way that's relatable to anyone who's played in a band or loved music or experienced heartbreak or struggled or has just been on a Forrest Gump-like journey through life. I'm really proud of this pod, so if you're a Krista Makes a Podcast or a One Hit Thunder fan, I think you'll love it. You can subscribe to A Band Called Punchline for free wherever you get your podcasts. Check it out. It would mean the world to me, and I think you'll love it.
Hey there, I'm Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.